something outside.
What is that?
Radio.
And welcome everybody to Monster X Radio. Shane Corson here, and today we got a great show for you. Can't wait to get our guest on, but Monster X Radio is brought to you by Sasquatch Coffee. Have you tried Yeti? And so today we're going to talk to Kate Hieronymus about his involvement with the BFRO. And the upcoming documentary he's working on, the Bluff Creek Project. Let's get Tate on the show. Hey, Tate.
Hey, what's up?
Not much, man. How you doing?
A little tired from driving and everything.
Yeah, you've been down in the Bluff Creek area filming, and I know you were telling me before the show you were bitten up by mosquitoes.
Yeah, still itching from that. I got all over my leg and head and arms. It's not fun.
No, man. I hear you. And right now the mosquitoes are out. They're a little bit late this year, but they're out and about and they're nasty. So, but you know, Tate, for the Monster X audience, can you just tell them a little bit about yourself and what got you into the Bigfoot subject?
Yeah. I'm originally from Des Moines, Iowa. So, you know, growing up, I was into things like, you know, conspiracy theories and the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and all these, but I've grown up, I was like, man, this is so cool learning about this kind of thing. And this is a Patterson film has really got me into it. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that over the years. But I've had an aunt, I've heard of my aunt having a story one time in Missouri before. But, you know, being young, I didn't really had much of a chance to do anything about it. Then I met some friends and stuff, and their, their uncle or something? No, their grandparent. Their granddad had a sighting in Minburn, Iowa. And that was a really cool account. It's actually on the BFRO website. So getting to hear these stories and stuff like that was really cool. And we moved to Mexico in 2011, so we were really close to, you know, California. We were in Ensenada. I was like, Dad, let's plan a trip to Bluff Creek. You know, that'd be really fun. And it wasn't until we moved to Ventura, about in 2013, I think it was, we planned our first trip to Bluff Creek, and that was 2015, something like that. It was a really cool experience. So that was my first, you know, exposure to like a location where there's like a lot of Bigfoot. So that was really fun.
Yeah, so you've had this this like most people, you were kind of into some of the mysteries and strange stuff out there, and then you got, you know, being in Ventura area, you know, California, heading up to Bluff Creek, kind of like for a lot of people, it's the Mecca, it's the it's the heart of Bigfootdom. You know, Tate, I wanted to ask you a quick question. I know the answer to this, but I will get emails galore and whatnot. Now, you share your last name with another gentleman, though there is no relation, but obviously Bob Hieronymus is a known, or is the guy claiming to have been the one wearing the Patty suit or costume from the film in October 20th, 1967. There is no relation, correct?
Yes, there is no relation.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify that because I've been asked, you know, when those were asking me, you know, friends asked me, who's your next guest on the show? And I said your name. And they're like, oh, is he a relation to Bob Hieronymus? And I said, no, In fact, their last names are spelled differently. And so I just wanted to clarify that to the audience, that there is no relationship there, even though the subject matter and is, you know, kind of related. So now that we get that out of the way.
That's a little weird that it's, you know, related. His last name is Hieronymus and mine, and it's like in the same subject.
Exactly. And I
can't.
When I first got in contact with you, I had to ask you that question because it was just so uncanny. You got two individuals, you know, the last name, I'll be honest, at the time I didn't look at the spelling. I just heard Hieronymus, so I thought, had to ask you. So, and given the Patty Patterson film subject matter, it was funny. But, you know, that's life, and there is no relation, and they're spelled different.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried. Like, you know, since my last name has Hieronymus, being in Bigfoot and, you know, and a researcher, it's kind of almost makes me worry a little bit, you know, to my credibility. That's like my one main concern for me.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the main people on the, you know, field, so they'll back me up on it. They know I'm credible.
Well, yeah, and first of all, you're right. Credibility is everything in this field. And secondly, if people don't do their homework and realize the last names are spelt different, you know, I don't know what to tell them. They can just make, you know, people make assumptions regardless.
Exactly.
Your credibility is intact, and you're doing some really cool stuff. But let's get into what. So you go up to Bluff Creek, you know, with your dad and whatnot. What happened after that? What got you to where you're at now?
Oh, it's just experiences I've had, and, you know, the drive, and almost have, you know, like having encounters and stuff like that is a kind of an adrenaline rush. You know, I ride dirt bikes and stuff, and I've been working at some off-road races in Mexico, but it's a little different than that, you know. So it was a lot of fun. We went up there with it was my dad, friend of mine, and another friend of mine, two other friends. And we were camping at Laos Camp in Bluff Creek area. It was the weirdest night. We got there. I'm telling the experience, by the way. So we got there. It was like 12:30 at night, driving from Ventura. So it was a long drive. We were all worn out. And when I got out of the car, up coming down the road or up the direction where the road is, I heard a whoop. And then, you know, being new to Bigfoot, you know, that startles you, especially late at night when you have never been to a place like that before. It really gets to you. So it wasn't until like maybe 2 or something like that, 2 or 3 in the morning, that I saw a shadow come up from where the creek is, and it stood right between this like this tall dead tree and our tent. It was there for a few seconds, turned, and went back the same way it came from. So it was a shadow. You know, it could have been anything. I'm not going to say for sure it was one or not. But I got audio, which sounded like someone walking outside of our tent, maybe. Possible whoop and knock and a howl. So that was kind of my first possible experience in the Bluff Creek area, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So, but it's really cool because you got this audio and stuff, and you had this possible experience in an area that is truly well known historically, and even up till now for its Bigfoot activity. I mean, Laos Creek is well known as a spot where a lot of individuals go and have been and had some supposed Bigfoot activity. And here you're out there and you get a whoop and you see, you know, this dark figure or shadow and then something possibly walk around camp, you know. That's pretty interesting. I mean, that's a lot more, you know, activity than a lot of people get. But you made the trip up there and had this possible experience. Was that experience your only experience possibly with a Sasquatch?
No, I've had, two others. And then just this July, possibly a third, so probably 4 times total. What was it? The second time was in actually near Ojai. It was weird because there's these natural pools me and my friend and my brother wanted to go to. It was kind of weird because where it happened was there's a place called, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Santa Aquinas College. in Ojai. It's like a Christian college type of thing. But anyway, you have to hike behind the college through like these passes that are there, and they're growing like oranges or something. There's a bunch of orchards back there. So you hike all the way through that and into like the into the canyon. But on our way out, it was getting dark. We were leaving, and it was we were walking around the same orchard area we passed earlier. And the three of us, me, my brother, and my friend, we saw this thing at the same time. We're like, dude, you guys see that? And it was walking on the opposite direction of the road. And probably before it got within like 300 feet, or not 300 feet, 300 meters, it took off up the hill. We didn't see it. We thought it was kind of weird because, you know, it was a college, and those college kids have curfews, I'm sure. And there was nobody else because they didn't say hi. And they, you know, I mean, what was it? It took off up the road, up the hill to his left. Kind of weird, weird behavior.
Yeah. Well, and
like the,
you had a few encounters?
Yeah, that was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was actually in Gorman, you know, off the 5 by Fraser Park, a couple, hours or so from Bakersfield. I actually found a track. I found several tracks. I found a track December 2015. And then I tweeted Matt Moneymaker about it. And was it this year? Or no, last year. He's like, hey, I want to meet you guys out there, maybe when you guys go out there again. So we met him out there and found a track. And I was like, hey, where should we go, for any Bigfoot action? He's like, go all the way to the top of the hill, and you'll get to this parking lot. And that's the beginning of a trail called Buck Creek, if anybody's familiar with that. So we went there. Me and my friend, we were staying there for a few hours. After a few hours, we decided to go do some knocks and stuff. I did a knock, but it didn't carry out as far as I was hoping. So I did a whoop, then I did one more. Then I barely heard a response on my edge of hearing. I was like, I asked my friend, did you hear that? And he's like, no, because we were kind of talking too at the same time. So we walked back to this overlook where we saw earlier. And we look around, and we saw eyes shining right back at us. We also had lights on, which I know is a no-no for Bigfooting. But, you know, whatever, it already happened. So we were looking around, and we saw the eyes shine, and it was staring right back at us. It didn't blink or anything. It was just fixed, didn't move. So we were probably standing there for about a couple minutes, and I had my thermal video recording the whole time. So I couldn't see it because I'm not used to thermals yet. So I couldn't see it. And it was like, 300 meters away, 300 yards away. And it was really hard to see it, but we could still see the eye shine. So that really, got us going and freaked us out a little bit. It wasn't until I got home, I looked at the footage, and then I saw it on the footage. I was like, man, we got it. We got something. It's another Blob Squatch video, though, but... It was really cool, to get that.
Yeah.
I feel privileged in a way.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the Gorman area, that Fraser Mountain, Fraser Park is another great spot location in between the Tejon Pass and San Joaquin Valley, And, it's kind of deserty kind of area, but the Fraser Mountain area, that park, has had quite a few sightings over the years. I know they get a few vocals out of there, but there has been some sightings in there. I mean, for that part of California, that if there were Sasquatch there, that's where they're going to be, is in that sort of area, because there is a lake not too far away from there, and there are some water sources and whatnot. So it wouldn't be surprising to me that you had an encounter there. That's not it's kind of one of my old stomping grounds, not an area that I frequented, but I have been up and around that area. So. It sounds
what's
like you've
nice
had.
There's not a lot of researchers.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
it's like really underrated there. People are like, oh, Bigfoot's near LA area. So there's not going to be a lot of researchers over there. They're going to want to go to like Washington or Oregon or Northern California, not Fraser Park.
Ex- Exactly. You know, because they think, you know, Fraser Park is in the Los Angeles County, I mean, area. So, but, I mean, there have been sightings there up through the, you know, San Bernardino Mountains. There's a corridor there that, you know, if there's Sasquatch, I mean, down there, that's where they're traveling. And that's going to be either a stopping point or a hunkering down spot for a bit. I mean, if they are, in fact, down in that area. And it wouldn't surprise me over the years when I was in San Diego, when I lived down there, I did take in reports from these areas. You know, there are some bear in these areas, so a few were misidentifications for sure. And then there were some of those that make you go, I don't know, such as your encounters and stuff. But to have the thermal, you know, that's exciting that you had one in hand and used it. And, you know, even though you came up with a blob squatch, which is what happens most of the time, unfortunately, you came away with something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kudos.
We know it wasn't a bear because it didn't seem like bear, do you call it? What's the word?
Just bear activity.
I forget the word now. Bear behavior. There you go. Behavior.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It didn't seem like normal bear behavior for it to just be watching us. And the fact that I heard a whoop, you know, a return whoop, shows that it wasn't a deer or a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's only really one way in there, and they would have to walk past us. So I know
right.
We weren't being hoaxed or anything.
Well, especially
so,
up in that
knows.
Area. Yeah, I mean, you can't rule out anything, right? And that's honest. That's it's an honest reply. In the day, you know, you did have something weird happen, and you catch them. You saw something in person and on the flare. So, So have all of you, do you get outside the state of California much? I mean, have you done any research in any other states and have any experiences outside of California?
Not yet. I haven't done any research. It wasn't really until I moved to California that I really started doing more, getting more involved
right.
with it. But I am going to plan a trip to, there's this place in southern Mexico in the Baja Peninsula. That's almost like the same terrain as, like, Fraser Park area up in the mountains, you know, where all the, you got water and stuff. There's Black Panther down there, which I believe there might be Bigfoot down there. I was talking to Kathy Strain about it, and she's like, yeah, there's probably Bigfoot down there. So I'm going to plan a research trip down there and see what I can find. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be a fascinating documentary by itself because there are reports – over the years of Sasquatch being in Mexico and South America, it'd be a fascinating, to do, even as a short documentary, just on your experiences and trip and talking to maybe some of the locals. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. And living down there, I made some friends that are bilingual, so they could probably go with me and help with that part. And who knows, maybe
yeah.
I can get some people to help, you know, keep in contact with if there's anybody that had any sightings.
Yeah.
It would make sense they would be – yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying keep us posted on that. But, yeah, that part of Mexico – but, yeah, finish what you were saying there.
Yeah, because like, it makes sense there would be Bigfoots. I mean, why would they not – they have them in Canada and, you know, the North America and stuff, you know, the U.S. Why would they not be in the Baja Peninsula? I mean, it's still connecting to the U.S. I mean, you have Bigfoot sightings from – Northern California, pretty much all the way down to San Diego, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why not, you know? Why not in Mexico?
Yeah.
It's warm weather, there's water, there's food.
Mm-hmm. And there's sightings in Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, pretty much all the southern states. And so, it would make sense. You know, you have panthers crossing, you know, jaguars crossing the border amongst other animals. Why not Sasquatch if, in fact, they are down in that area?
Exactly. I mean, it makes sense to me. So that's why I really want to go and find out.
Yeah, fascinating, fascinating study, and something I would look forward to watching if you did in fact put something together on that. But let's get back to your encounters before we get into this documentary you're working on the Bluff Creek area. So you mentioned. So is that? I think you had another encounter just recently. You were talking about.
Yeah, it was it was me, Robert Leiderman, Rowdy Kelly, for those who are listening who don't know, they're with the Bluff Creek Project, and Roddy Kelly's worked on the Finding Bigfoot TV show a few times. So it was us three and another guy named Glenn. So we went up to Onion Lake around, maybe 12 o'clock at night. We were there for a few hours. So me and Robert Leiderman, we went down to the lake area where the campsite. Have you been up there to Onion Lake?
I have not. I know a lot of people that have and still do. It's a fantastic area and a lot of Bigfoot activity or supposed Bigfoot activity out of there. Ton of good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we went up there and we went down. We were hoping, we were kind of going to go there thinking there might be someone there. So we went to check, me and Robert. And there wasn't. So we radioed over to Rowdy and Glenn, saying it was all clear. So we hunkered down and stayed there. We did, Robert and I did one knock. We didn't hear anything. We were probably there for 25 minutes, didn't hear anything. Then Rowdy and Glenn eventually came over to where we were at because they weren't getting anything either. And then, I did another couple knocks. I did two more knocks. And we were listening. About 5 minutes later, we heard a... to me, it sounded like a loud knock across the pond up into the forest, which could have been anything, Could have been a pine cone falling on a log or rock or something and just made the sound. But it didn't... It sounded too coincidental for me, in my opinion. Then after that, it was about another 10, 15 minutes later, I did a couple more knocks. Then waited a bit to hear. Then we heard a branch break up in the meadow just behind the tree line a little bit, which we all heard, and Roddy's dog, Chloe, heard it too. So that was the experience that we had. It was really dead that night too. No frogs, no crickets. Heard like a squirrel or heard one squirrel. That was about it. But it was very interesting to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like one of those you kind of had to be there scenarios where, and I'll be honest, you were out with some great guys. I mean, Rowdy Kelly and Robert Leiderman, they're fantastic researchers and individuals. Like I said, members of the Bluff Creek Project, along with Jamie Wayne and Stephen Streifert and others, all great people, skeptical in nature, and wonderful researchers, that I have followed over the years, especially with this Bluff Creek Project. And Tate, if you don't mind, can you talk a little bit about how you kind of got involved, or in getting to know some of these individuals and getting to go out with them? Was it strictly because you were putting together this documentary, or did that happen after the fact?
It kind of happened after the fact. Like, it wasn't like when my first trip, it was all meeting all these people happened pretty much by chance, So it wasn't the first trip. I didn't meet Steve until, the second time I went up there in October? I've been there numerous of times, but I've been like doing these little short films I was, just for fun. And then, every time I went back up there, I'd meet like new people. So I think it was the second time I met Stephen Streifert, and then I kept in contact with him. So that's how I met Stephen, just going up there because he's got the book, Bigfoot books up in Willow Creek. So that's how I met him. And so I kept in contact with him and stuff like that. Then it wasn't until October in 2015, another friend of mine and I went up there, and we actually ran into Bobo and Cliff Berrickman, from the Finding Bigfoot TV show. And Tom Yamarone was there, and Terry Smith was there. So that's how I met those guys. So I've been in contact with them ever since. And then I haven't met Jamie Wayne. I met Jamie Wayne recently at the Finding Bigfoot TV show they were filming a few months ago.
Yeah.
That's where I finally met him, because I was getting in contact with him about the whole Bluff Creek thing. And yeah, they all asked me about my last name too, so that was funny. But that's how I met those guys. And then I met Robert Weiderman at the thing, at that TV show when they were filming up there. Who else did I meet? Kip. You know Kip?
Kip Morrill, yeah, yeah. Good guy.
Yeah, I don't want to say his last name. I'll mess it up. That's where I met Roddy Kelly, too. So that's where I met those guys. So it was all by chance and, you know, that kind of funny thing. You never know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to be there. You know, you got to put yourself in those situations to meet certain individuals, just like you got to put yourself in certain situations to possibly have a Sasquatch encounter, a Bigfoot encounter. So, but it takes time and effort, and you're doing that. How many times have you been out in the field with any of those individuals or up in that area in general?
I've been to the Bluff Creek area about maybe 6 times now, 7. I've lost track.
Yeah.
As far as being in the field, that was actually my first time being in the field with any of the known people in the Bigfoot community, you know, Robert Lighterman, Roddy Kelly. That was my first time out with anybody like that. So I learned a lot that night, you know. It was really cool to learn, so that'll definitely help me in, like, when I go out to my research area in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it'll help
greatly. Yeah, describe the, before we get a little bit more into the concept and the idea behind this documentary you're working on, can you describe the Bluff Creek area from your perspective a little bit about the film site and just the area itself?
Oh, yeah, like the Bluff Creek area, you know, seeing photos of it back then during the 64 flood or after the 64 flood, you know, it was all cleared out. But now you go down there and it's like overgrown, like really, there's just like a lot of trees everywhere. And the creek's a lot more narrow now, but it's still like really beautiful, and it's like really far back out into the wilderness. I don't know, hour or something like that, or to get back in there at least, or an hour or 30 minutes or something like that driving. But it's really nice, and I've been to the PG site several times, and it's changed a little bit over the years, you know. You'd be surprised, like, after going there and then going back there next year. It, you know, the foliage grows really fast over there. It doesn't, you know, there's no, don't have a set rule for where it can grow. But yeah, just recently. Oh, sorry.
Oh, and I was just going to say, it definitely has changed over the years. I mean, almost unrecognizable. And that kind of brings, you know, to mind, you know, and as recognizing quite a feat in refinding this area. I mean, it was, you know, the PG area was kind of lost. And the Bluff Creek Project really, you know, with a group of individuals went out there and I mean, I'm sure they've located. That's definitely the spot. And kudos to them because, you know, It was no easy feat in locating that location.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool when you go there too, because you know when you get to the, if you haven't been to the PG site, when you see the 67 film, it ain't gonna look anything like that anymore, because you know it's all washed out. But where Patty, it's cool because when you go there, if you know what to look for, you can see, you can find the big tree, which I've seen several times, and all the stumps that are like the markers in the film, you'll see that. And you know, one thing they're trying to figure out, but you can see roughly where she walked. So that was really cool to get to see all that. And it was kind of surreal for me. I don't know how to describe it. It's like someone who's a really big fan of football going to see the Hall of Fame or something. You know, it's like that.
That's a good analogy. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Dave. Since you now, I don't know what your opinion before you went out to that location as far as the Patterson-Gimlin film. I don't want to get into this too much, but I'm curious. What's your what's your believability, or I mean, how much stock do you put into the Patterson-Gimlin film from 1967? Are you, do you think that's a real Sasquatch in that film, or do you think otherwise?
Yeah, I, it looks very real to me, and everything I've researched on it, plus the fact of it being real.
Yeah.
I'm kind of pretty funny there.
Tate, I'm sorry, I'm losing you a little bit. Our reception's getting a little bit shoddy, but yeah, I'm with you there. I believe that is a real female Sasquatch. I've said that time and time again. Too many things point to it, to it being a real Sasquatch. And going to the area, I've personally never been, but I have seen the before and after pictures. I followed it closely. The area is pretty phenomenal, and I could imagine, like you said, to be like, the analogy with the, being a football fan and going to the Hall of Fame. That's a good analogy, and I would feel the same for many reasons. Fortunately, I got the next closest thing to being going to the location. I'm friends with Bob Gimlin, one of the guys there, and he's a fantastic individual and an honest guy in my book. And so, that's my moment of looking up to something bigger than myself for sure. Are you still there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, much better. So Tate, you've been to the area. Now let's get into this documentary you're working on. And you did say that, to me, before the show we were chatting that, this is kind of, it is a work in progress, and then, given, your time in the field and ideas and people you work with, that the documentary is kind of changing direction. It's kind of developing, into different things, which is neat. It's exciting. But what got you? What gave you the idea to do a documentary on this area, the Bluff Creek Project? And what should we expect out of this?
The idea came from, you see all these in the Bigfoot community, you see like TV shows that showcase the Patterson-Gimlin site and stuff like that, but no one ever gets their props about the site, the people that found it, which is the Bluff Creek Project. So just going there and seeing it, doing these little short films, and after meeting these people, kind of gave me the idea to want to do it. So it kind of just showcases, the guys who found it, it's more about getting to know the people than it is about the project. And like I said, yeah, it's changing course, and it's almost like a documentary on the film site itself too, which is kind of nice because I don't think there's ever been like a short film or kind of a short documentary on the site itself. So, there'll be a lot of, we'll show a lot of old photos of stories and stuff like that. And actually, there was a guy, this Bluff Creek trip, Mike, I can't remember his last name, but he was telling us he had a story that Rene DeHinden took him down to the site personally. So we'll have some stories from him and stuff like that. And it'd be really, so there's a lot of really cool stuff. I don't want to give, a lot of things away,
yeah.
But we were down there and got a lot of great footage though. So it'll be, I'm really looking forward to it, and like it's still not done. There's still a lot to film, and you can't do all that in a couple of days,
Right, right. If you're going to do a documentary, man, take your time, do it right. Because I see a lot of people, they kind of rush through it, and it's just that the heart and the and what they want to get across is there, but it just wasn't quality. Taking your time and. And which I think you're doing. You're going to be filming until next July, if not longer. So that's, you're doing your due diligence there and whatnot. But, Tate, what's, you kind of answered my question already, but what kind of separates this documentary from other Bigfoot films and specifically, those that have dealt with the PG film? You're right, there hasn't been a whole lot of films on the site itself. I know there's been some stuff with Bill Munns where they've done some measurements and stuff like that in some films. But what kind of separates this documentary that you're working on? And you probably can't even fully answer this question because you're still working on it. But what is your idea on how this documentary kind of separates itself from some of the other Bigfoot films and documentaries?
Most of the documentaries I've been watching, because I like watching those kind of things, it's more about the subject of Bigfoot than anything. You know, they're trying to find Bigfoot, and you know, it's all the Bigfoot research, that aspect. But that's kind of what I'm doing differently. I'm not trying to do a Bigfoot, like, you know, go out and look for Bigfoot documentary, like, oh, let's go film this and hopefully get some action. No, it's just more about the site and the historic of it, you know, about Willow Creek and filming around there too, and kind of what led up to that incident in 1967 and stuff like that. And you know, that's kind of the idea, and I think that's what sets us apart a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly something I'd like to watch. I mean, if you could do the build up to the sighting, and then you know talk about that, but then also get into the people. I think it's an important element, especially nowadays when you're talking about like a group like such as the Bluff Creek Project, who are doing really fantastic stuff down there with their trail cameras and their traps. You know, I mean, they've gotten some amazing video and pictures of some of the known wildlife down there, like, you know, your bear, your cougar, you know, your raccoon, deer, and whatnot. But they also have gotten something pretty extraordinary that I've talked about on the show with Steven Streifer before and a few of the others. You know, they got very endangered Humboldt Martin on video. You know, that's really exciting because, you know, these things, you know, as far as I knew, were, I think, believed to be almost extinct in the area, and no one had seen one in a while, and they got one on camera.
Yeah, that's really extraordinary. I wonder if that'll, like, mess up with the logging back in there, because I know there's a lot of logging that goes on, you know, closer to Highway 96 before you go out further into Bluff Creek. There's a lot of logging back in there, so who knows what will happen with that, you know?
Especially if it's an
endangered species.
Right, that's a fascinating point and a fascinating question. I personally had not considered that. I wonder, you know, Stephen and Jamie might be better equipped to answer that question. I don't know if it matters. I don't know if it would matter. I can only imagine if Sasquatch has proven to exist, what that could possibly do to some of these logging areas and logging companies, let alone, you know, like a Martin. So, and, you know, who knows what else they could capture on these cameras. That's the one thing I love about trail cameras. A lot of people are anti-trail camera and it scares Sasquatch, but I don't think it really scares the way. I think they avoid them sometimes, and it's just like trying to capture a needle in a haystack when it comes to a moving needle in a haystack, as Gunnar Monson
exactly.
The show always says. Yeah, so it's – but trail cameras, you know, man, and what they're doing with them, the way – where they're placing them and the area they're placing them, I mean, look, they got a Martin. That's pretty extraordinary and pretty exciting, and I know that's something science can look and go, okay, that's wow. That's a worthy cause.
Exactly, and it's with the trail cameras. It's when you go down there and you see all the trail cameras. It's almost redundant how many trail cameras are all in one spot, but it's also really nice because it's covering a lot of vantage points, and it's almost going to make it impossible for anything not to get a photo taken of. You know, so they got every angle of cover you can imagine. So that's actually a really good thing.
Right, they're not.
They have
just,
like, yeah,
they're not just dropping these cameras
willy nilly, you know. And they have like cameras right by the MK Davis site too, which is really cool. And then obviously right at the Patterson-Gimlin site, they have trail cameras everywhere over there. And then Fish Lake. They have cameras over there and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They got all over the place. It's really nice. So, and I think they were going to put one in Lyard Meadow too.
Yeah,
they've
got their cameras placed in quite a few different places. But like you were just talking about, it's how they place them that I think is a good thing. It's, you know, they're not just placing them randomly. They're thought out. I know that they did lose a few cameras because. And I'm guilty of this too, where you place them and then the snow level rises and your camera gets buried, and then the water damage just destroys them. And you know, that's just part of the part of the game there of placing them. You just can't account always for the weather.
No, yeah, the weather's not. You can't control the weather because it's not cooperative. You can't, you know. That's why you got to make up for it, where you place the camera.
You know, it's a gamble sometimes. You know, recently, you know, I work with a group called the Olympic Project, and you know, we lost a camera to a bear, and a couple of, you know, found a couple of cubs, found it and tore the snot out of it, and yeah, so it's just one of those things, you know, it's a gamble, but it's a worthy gamble, especially when you can get something like, well, any wildlife on there in general, but you know, something special like a marten, so that's pretty unique, and given the area. You know, and I hope one day that the Bluff Creek Project, you know, they're very skeptical in nature, as they should be. And I know some of those guys have had their own experiences, encounters. But hopefully down the road they could maybe actually pull something out of the area that's at least questionable, you know, a possible Sasquatch. That would be truly exciting. And I think the more time they spend in this area in studying it and placing cameras, the better chance they have. And just the fact that they're actually studying, you know, the site, and they've located the site itself to have you now on board kind of filming this stuff and taking the time to get out there and getting eaten alive by mosquitoes, that's pretty dang special all by itself.
Yeah, I don't know why I do it to myself, but someone's got to do it.
Right.
No.
Well, you know, it'll be worth it in the end, especially when you're and you're not done being eaten by mosquitoes, so you got a lot more days of getting your blood sucked.
Yeah, those mosquitoes were really bad this trip. I don't know what it was. Really hot. I've been there in the summer before, but this summer was just a lot hotter than the last times, and the mosquitoes was really bad. So it must be the weather or something, you know, driving nuts.
Yeah, I know up here in the Pacific Northwest, specifically, you know, like Washington, Oregon, the extreme weather we had this year with the winter and the extended winter we had, and the amount of snow, it delayed everything. The berry growth up here, their berries are just starting to come out now up here, and the mosquitoes are hatching a little bit later, I think. And I think that's just a, you know, a combination of just a really bad winter. I know Northern California kind of had it bad too, so maybe that plays a part in it. I don't know, but they're out, and they're pretty nasty.
Yeah, they're not fun. They really. They're like the spawn of Satan over there, you know. They're the devil.
Yeah, they make for a nasty time, and that's why I give kudos and to those that actually take the time to get out there and get eaten alive, trying to either do research or, you know, or do a little bit of both, such as yourself. Now, what do you got planned on down the road with it? I know you're a BFRO member. You're partaking in some stuff down the road?
Yeah, I recently just became a BFRO member few months ago, actually, and so I'm doing like research, and like we were talking about, you know, sightings and looking at the report, there's just surprisingly, it's actually an alarming amount of reports that come out of like San Bernardino and Los Angeles County area and even San Diego stuff, and it's really mind-boggling. You know, people are like, oh, there's not going to be any Bigfoots, but you look at the reports, well, what's there, and it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I'm really busy. I try to keep busy in everything I do. I'm busy in this. So I'm doing, like, BFRO reports, and I'm actually doing reports for Cliff Berrickman. So I look up the reports over there and, you know, do that kind of thing for him. Because those guys, you know, like, Matt Moneymaker, you know, it's good that he has a bunch of people doing it because he's going to get bombarded by just fans who want to get attention, you know. And same thing with Cliff. It's good that he has people doing it like me and others because, you know, he can't go out and talk to everybody because everybody will just make it up, just talk to him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of
exactly
what he was telling me one time. So it's nice to be able to get my feet wet in the field and stuff. And like I said, I'm new to it. So, you know, being new to something like that in the dark is uncomfortable, but it's something you got to get used to if you're going to do this. So.
Darn right. You're darn right. yeah, because if you're going to be a decent researcher and adamant about doing things right, you got to be ready for the daylight hours as well as the nighttime hours and at all times of year and all types of weather. But, you know, the funny thing about, you know, Southern California, as we're talking about, as you were just mentioning, you know, a lot of people can't fathom. I mean, those familiar with the area, or at least they think they're familiar with the area of Southern California, you know, there are forests down there. There are, you know, the Cleveland National Forest. You got, you know, Los Angeles Forest. I mean, there's a different forest. There's actually more water than people think to be found in some of these areas. And there's a ton, an absolute ton of sightings, both in the desert, in the mountains areas. You know, you have the alpine area down in San Diego, which, you know, I think, you know, you have the Zubies, as reported back years ago, and different, you know, Stickman and Yucca Man in some of these areas, more deserty areas like Joshua Tree National Park. And you do have sightings around Palomar Mountain down in Southern California, all the way up San Bernardino. And then you get up into the Sierras and Yosemite. And, of course, there's a lot of sightings up that way. But, you know, Cliff Berrickman recently shared a report with me because he knows I'm from that area. And he's passed it on to some other researchers down in that area. But there was a report down there. I don't want to give up the location exactly because it's still being investigated. But it was pretty I'll share this here real quick. It was near a wildlife where somebody was driving, and they, you know, that worked at this park was driving home, whatever, and thought they saw a big gorilla cross the road on all fours. So they immediately turned around and went back to the park, and reported it. Well, they did a head count on all their primates, and there was none reported missing. And I believe it was the following day, and I could be wrong on this, but it was like the following day or a couple of days later, there was some of the security guys, you know, walking around the fence line, you know, checking the fence and stuff, and they had some rocks tossed at them, and they heard some vocals, freaked them out. And so, you know, was it a Sasquatch? I don't know. But this guy driving knew what he was looking at without knowing exactly what he was looking at, enough for him to turn around and make sure they did a head count and report it. So that's Southern California. I know the exact area because I lived 15, 20 miles away from this area where there's been other reports. This area's got deer, it's got cougar, it's very mountainous and rocky, it's got a lot of water sources and cover. And if there was a Sasquatch in this area, this is where they would be. So, a lot to say about Southern California.
Exactly. Like Cliff was saying, too, one time, they don't need all these. They don't need that heavily forested area, you know. It's what they need is food, water, and cover. And even like the brush in the mountains is pretty tall. You can duck behind that and not be seen.
Oh yeah.
I mean, think of how many times you'll see a bear out there. It's really rare. They're out there in mountain lions.
It is, but it does happen. The bear. I remember when I lived in San Diego, there was a bear sighting, and people were like, no way. And then eventually, it showed up in an area. And people couldn't believe that a bear had gone from where it came from, obviously, to where it was now, because there really isn't any a lot of bear activity in San Diego County itself. You get outside San Bernardino and stuff like that, yeah, sure. But in the area down there, there was a bear roaming around, once again, not too far away from where I used to live, and it blew people's minds that there was a bear that managed to go from this location to another location and go undetected and uncovered, you know, and survive. So it goes to show goes to show you how much we think we know, and we just assume because we think we know it all that we can say, okay, there'll be no bears here, there'll be no Sasquatch, there'll be no, but in fact, there are.
You know what's crazy, too, is in this, because Southern California, there's a lot of people, several million people, you know, and there's like a lot of hiking trails in the mountains that people go to. I mean, during the day, you, like, think, oh, there's too many people here. But at night, that's, like, a whole different ballgame. You know, wildlife, no one's going to be out there at night, you know, hiking around.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're hardcore about it.
Right.
But, yeah, this is not going to happen. So, you know, that's when they're most active. And
the other thing on that as well. Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, and I don't know of many people that go hiking at night anywhere out there. Maybe the Cuyamac area, which is very Southern California, East County. But the thing is, how many reports, down in these areas where, San Diego and some of these areas where people don't have any knowledge, really have no experience around bear or cougar or any other animals, even deer, and they how many reports of, if it is a Sasquatch, go unreported because they assume it's a bear or this or that. they don't know what they're hearing or looking at per se, and they just assume it's this or that. I mean that goes for anywhere, but I could see down there it being a being, you know, the amount of, there's probably a lot more reports, you know, which is true to case for most areas, but don't go reported.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Makes you wonder. You know, it's funny. I on Facebook I follow this group called Hiking in the Pacific Northwest. And it's funny because it's not about Bigfoot. It's just about people wanting to go hiking and stuff and sharing. And I've posted on there several times, like, if anybody ever had a encounter with a Bigfoot. And actually, surprisingly, I've had a few people message me and tell me their, you know, stories. So that was really cool. And that just shows you that there is reports that go unreported.
Oh, man. But, yeah, there was just a there is a hiking group I'm involved in online in, from Washington, and I'm in these groups for the hiking, but I'm also in there because just like the hunting forums, the fishing forums, the hiking forums, the nature forums, Bigfoot always get a Bigfoot report in there, or people asking, do people believe in Bigfoot? There's always something Bigfoot. Some of the best encounters I've ever read have been on these non-Bigfoot forums and groups where
exactly.
You know, especially the hunting forum. The hunting forums, people are really sticking their neck out there when you mention Bigfoot, because all of a sudden they get slammed by every joke. But those are the ones I really take to heart, because they already know they're probably in for a slap around. But the Washington,
exactly.
The Washington hiking group that I'm in, just the other day, someone posted, you know, I had this experience in such and such place, vocals and this and that, and his or her description. Of the vocals really didn't match anything that you could, you know, people were, well, what could it be, this could it be, that, but the way he described or this vocal, it really sounded very Bigfoot like or what we assume or have recorded and assume Bigfoot may do, and that happens all the time, but that'll never make it to the BFRO. It won't make it anywhere but that forum, you know. But how many people, it was funny how many people under that post shared a story or an encounter, or said, I believe, you know, I was, you know, I'm always amazed at the, you know, you post that in a group and it explodes and you're like, wow.
Yeah. Cause a lot of people don't know where to report it either. You know, they don't even know what the BFRO is.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean,
like,
that's, yeah. Where do they report it to? Who do they report it to? You know?
I mean, like for me getting involved in Bigfoot, it's like, man, I don't even know anybody I could talk to about wanting to get to do more involved in it. But, you know, you just got to know the where to look. And it's sometimes
mm-hmm.
hard to know where to look because you don't know who to trust.
Right, yeah. And that's another good point, especially getting into this. You know, you can be really jaded if you get involved with the wrong group or individuals, and it can leave a sour taste in your mouth, and then you'll close up, and that's your interest, you know, toast, or at least your involvement in the subject, and that's a shame. Fortunately, Tate,
exactly.
you're involved with some of the best, in my opinion, and guys doing great work. We're getting close to the end of the show here, but I just wanted to say, you know, thank goodness you're involved with a group like this, and I can't wait to see what comes of this documentary, your involvement, and your research down the road here. I think it's going to be a fantastic documentary. Keep us posted on what's going on with that, your trailer releases and anything of that nature. You got any anything else you'd like to share, Tate, before we wrap up the show?
Yeah, the documentary will be cool because Cliff Berkman, I think, is doing an interview for it, and I'm still communicating with him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm trying to decide if I want to say this or not publicly, but I told you, but I don't want to blow it with anybody, so I'll just keep it quiet.
Well, now you got me in trouble, but that's okay.
No, you're good. There's a cool surprise, though. I think it'll be nice. Any fans of TV will like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll leave that little cliffhanger for when we have you back on and your trailer's out. Or your documentary is out on the table. So, I know you got a ton of you're interviewing a lot of the Bluff Creek individuals themselves, as well as, you know, like Cliff Berkman. Like you said, this is a living, breathing documentary as we speak. You're still working on it. You're still heading out to these areas. You're still filming. And I would imagine some of the scenery in the background is amazing, as well as, you know, some of your interviews are going to be pretty dang interesting, both with the history of the area and the people involved. So really looking forward to it, Tate. Any last words? We're going to wrap this up here.
Squatch safely. You know, be smart when you go out there, and you know, don't get lost. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell somebody
don't believe
where you're
everything
going.
You hear. Don't believe everything
right.
You hear, but also sometimes it's not bad to believe everything you hear. I don't know. It's all up to you.
Yeah. No. Good. Wise words. No, I appreciate it. But hey, Tate, really appreciate you joining us. Looking forward again to this documentary coming out. Keep us posted. We'll have you back on the show, down the road here to see exactly what's going on with the documentary and if there's anything new to share, man. I appreciate you taking your time to join us.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.
All right, man. Well, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Well, all, I really enjoyed this conversation with Tate Hieronymus. No relation to Bob the Hoaxer Hieronymus. And yes, I said that because I believe he's a liar, but that's just my opinion. Anyways, I did enjoy talking to Tate Hieronymus, and I'm really looking forward to this particular documentary because I love I love the film, but I love the fact that the Bluff Creek Project and those individuals, outstanding researchers and skeptical-minded individuals who are using, that know that area really well, and they're still learning stuff, but they're still seeking stuff out. You know, it's not, they didn't just find the area and go, okay, cool, you know, pat on the back. No, they're building upon that, and, you know, kudos to the whole group. And I'm glad that Tate's taking the time to do a documentary on this and film these guys, and talk about the history and stuff. So look forward to this, and we'll keep you posted on the release date and any trailers. I know he's got a small trailer out now, but I'm sure he'll be releasing another down the road. So anyways, thanks again, Monster Extras, for joining us. We'll be back again next week, same bat time, bat station. And for Gunnar Monson and Shane Corson, Squatch on.
Thank you for joining Monster X Radio.